left the hotel dining room without ordering. While Matt could stomach the idea of a wheatgrass smoothie, he couldn't deal with Kate's total silence now that they were on the road and headed for the beer fest. Stella was stowed in her crate on the back seat, but probably still shooting him death rays.
"You're mighty quiet," Matt said.
"What would you like to talk about?"
"Last night."
"I didn't think guys talked about stuff like that."
"It's true. It's rule number 5 in the Code of Manliness Handbook. I'm making a one-time exception."
Kate sighed.
"Okay, so here goes. I'm kind of glad for the poodle alarm last night. I made myself a promise not to get involved with anyone until I figured out my life. For the first time, I feel like I might actually be making progress with that."
He had to give Kate credit. Not only did she have an impressive amount of willpower, she was also tenacious, passionate, and forthright. It was all he could do not to pull the car over and kiss her. But patience and planning had helped him succeed in business, and it would help him succeed with Kate. First things first, win over the dog.
"I understand completely."
"You do?"
"Sure. I was lucky to be able to find my calling in a hobby I loved, but it was hard work figuring out how to build and run a business. It took all the energy I had. Right now, your business is your life. There's no reason to rush things between us."
Kate's body relaxed, and when she smiled up at him, Matt once again had to fight not to pull over to the side of the road. Sooner or later, Kate would come around, but how he'd help her get there was a more complicated proposition than charming the poodle. All he needed for Stella was a lamb chop in each pocket. Kate would take finesse. They pulled into the parking lot at Farmer's Market a few minutes later and noticed a police cruiser was parked in front of the main entry door.
"What do you suppose that's about?" Kate asked, looking at the cruiser.
"I suppose it's just life in the big city."
They entered the building and made their way toward the Depot Brewing booth, stopping in the middle of the aisle, grimly gaping at the Depot Brewing Company banner, hanging in tatters. Harley, Jr., and Torvald Mortensen stood in front of Matt's booth with 2 police officers. A scarecrow manned the booth, dressed in a Depot Brewery t-shirt and hat. A huge, jagged hunting knife was stuck in its belly, and a corkscrew protruded from its right eye.
"The leftover beer from last night is gone," Jr. said. "We set up the tables again, though. They were all wrecked."
Matt clapped his friend on the shoulder.
"Thanks, pal. I appreciate the help."
Matt, Harley, Jr., and Torvald answered the officers' questions while Kate sat on the floor, sorting through upended boxes. Matt was handing one of the officers his card when Kate joined them. She held out a vintage lighter decorated with a black and white enamel eagle.
"Sorry to interrupt, but I found this with the merchandise. I thought maybe it was Harley's."
Harley barely glanced at it.
"Nope."
"Are you sure?" Kate asked. "It looks like one from your collection."
"Sure, that's yours," Junior said. "I got it for you last Christmas."
Harley absently patted his pants pocket.
"Huh. I must be worse off from last night than I thought. It's mine, all right. It must have fallen out of my pocket a couple of minutes ago when I was moving that stuff near the table. Thanks for finding it."
She handed it to him and turned her attention to Junior. Junior clutched his blue cooler, searching for something to say.
"I heard you've got bees in your house. You should be careful because bees can be very dangerous."
Kate opened her mouth, thought better of telling Junior what she'd like to do with her bees, and snapped her mouth shut. Matt asked the police what they knew so far, and it was nothing helpful. The building manager had opened the place at 5 to let in the cleaning crew. They'd done their job and left. The manager had stayed in his office. He'd also admitted to dozing off. Anyone could have slipped in at any point. Matt thanked the police and asked to be sent a copy of their report. Beyond that, he doubted that he'd hear from them again.
"Let's get to it," he said to his crew.
Harley volunteered to get the rest of the beer from Matt's truck while Torvald and Junior bought ice. It would be a shorter pouring day, but not a total wipeout. Kate got her hands on a ladder and roll of duct tape and began piecing the banner together from behind.
"Looks like you're going to need more tape," Matt said.
Kate leaned precariously from the top step of the ladder trying to fix a torn piece.
"I've got just enough. It's not going to be perfect, but it will do."
Harley rounded the table, wheeling a dolly stacked with cases of bottled beer.
His labored breathing made it clear that he was too hungover and out of shape to be a beer hauler.
"You're handling this situation like a champ," Harley said to Matt. "I didn't know I had a choice. Most guys would be bitching and moaning."
Matt smiled.
"I've discovered it doesn't make much of a difference whether I do or don't, so I'm opting for don't."
Chet Orowski strolled up.
"Looks like what goes round comes round, huh, Culhane? I heard what happened to you."
He looked at the Scarecrow.
"Looks to me like you screwed the wrong guy. You ought to be more careful."
"It's no big deal," Matt said. "We've still got some beer. The banner's okay. I'm thinking of using the Scarecrow so I can ride in carpool lanes, and we're going to have fun. Because that's what we're in the business for, right?"
Chet threw up his hands, looking around the room, hoping for an audience.
Yeah, great PR spin. But we both know the truth. Someone here hates you. I guess you're not the big star you thought you were."
"I've never thought of myself as a big star," Matt said. "I brew beer, and that's it."
Chet snorted.
"Sure thing. You've got your pride the same as all of us, and now your nose is getting rubbed in it. It couldn't happen to a nicer guy."
Kate finished taping the sign and started down the ladder. The ladder rocked left, and Kate leaned right, trying to keep from falling. For a long moment, both Kate and the ladder seemed to hover in the air before they both came crashing down, straight onto Chet. And as they lay there in a heap, Kate was as grateful for Chet's bulk as she was for her small stature. Between the combination of the two, she didn't actually kill him.
"Chet didn't do it, you know,"
Matt said to Kate that night as they headed west through Detroit's endless string of suburbs. She peeked into the back seat to check on Stella in her travel crate. "How can you be so sure?"
"Because he's a lot like your ex-husband. Lots of bluster and no action."
Kate looked out the window. "You don't know the half of it."
"All I'm saying is that Chet couldn't get out of his own way to pull off this stuff. And even if he did trash the booth, which he didn't, he doesn't have the right contacts in Keene's Harbor. Yeah, spare brewery keys could have been floating around, but how would Chet have gotten his hands on one?"
Kate sighed. "Okay, good point. But we're right back to where we started. More vandalism and too many suspects. We'll put Jerry on the back burner since he wasn't around. That leaves us with the Mortensons, Junior, and Harley. Do we know where the Mortensons were last night?"
"In bed by 9, probably. They're a pretty low-key couple."
"We'll put them aside for now." She paused. "I did pick up Harley's lighter, though."
"He said he dropped it while straightening the booth. Did you find it someplace where that couldn't be possible?"
"No, it was on top of a box of coasters."
"Not exactly enough to convict the guy," Matt said. "Besides, Junior and Harley have each other for alibis. They were at a sports bar until the Pistons game ended, then back at the hotel bar until last call. Judging by the way they look today, I'm sure they can prove it."
Kate sighed again. "I'm sure they can." Stella whimpered from the back seat. "Do you mind if I get her out?" Kate asked.
"No problem."
Matt kept his eyes on the road as Kate violated a couple of traffic laws while freeing her poodle. "I can't believe how tired I am," Kate said once she and the dog were safely in front. "I think I'll just close my eyes and..." She yawned, and Matt filled in the rest of her words for himself. Somewhere just east of Lansing, a slight whistling sound drew Matt's attention from the road. Kate was curled up with Stella. Both woman and dog were out cold. A louder whistling came his way. The dog was snoring. Chapter 15. On Thursday morning, Kate woke to a poodle nestled next to her head, and as had been true every morning since the work week had started, her phone was ringing. Kate's, not Stella's. Kate had spoiled her baby with long beach walks, but the dog would not be getting a phone. "Hello?" Kate said, feeling rested and ridiculously content.
"Let me guess," Matt said. "You overslept."
Kate sat upright, and Stella grunted her disapproval of the change in her sleeping arrangements. "No way, again? I set my alarm, really." She couldn't stop smiling, though. Several nights in a row of more than 8 consecutive hours of sleep. She might not have any walls or a master bathroom or a living room floor, but at least the mold and most of the bees were gone. She felt human again. If you could amble on in here before I take any more guff about giving you special treatment, I just might forgive you, Matt said. He sounded amused, and Kate's smile grew into a grin.
Let me take a shower and give Stella her morning walk, and then I'll be right there.
Matt laughed. So, like noon, right?
No later than 10, I promise.
Hey, and find Bart when you get here, okay? Layla's ready to come back, so you're going to be assistant to the assistant brewers.
Sounds filled with responsibility, Kate said. But really, she didn't care what Matt had her doing so long as she was earning and snooping and getting to see him. She had fallen for him, and the ginger poodle had sealed the deal. At precisely 10 o'clock, Kate found Bart the brewmaster by a large wipe-off board where he was scribbling dates and other random things. Floyd, his assistant, stood to his right. The older man possessed a rather impressively sized beer belly. Kate had to appreciate a guy who showed that much love for his chosen career. Next to Floyd was Nan O'Brien, assistant brewer number 2. Nan was an Amazon of a woman, at least 6 feet tall and fit. A hunter, triathlete, and seasoned sailor, Nan could whip any television survival show dude with one arm tied behind her back.
Hey, Bart, Kate said. Sorry I'm late.
Let's talk before we get started, he said.
He waved off his assistants, telling them they'd finish later.
Kate joined him at the whiteboard. So tell me what you're going to be doing back here today.
I'm going to be getting another batch of dog day ready to boil, which means that you are going to be cleaning the brew house for me.
She looked around. The whole place? He laughed.
It looks like you're in need of a little more training, eh?
Bart led her across the room and patted a big, almost bullet-shaped tank that stood 7 or so feet tall.
This is the brew house, a 30-barrel brew house, to be exact. And those other tanks attached to it are the fermenters. After the boil, the wort is sent through the pipes to its left and into those fermenters where the yeast is added.
Really, the brew house was kind of pretty, all copper and stainless and shiny, and it looked very clean already, which she pointed out to Bart.
It's not the same picture on the inside, and that's what you're going to be concerned with, he said.
Hang on, you mean I have to get in there?
Yes, and believe me, it's a much easier fit for someone your size than it is for me or Nan or Floyd.
He hitched his thumb toward the 2 assistant brewers who were now in conversation by the door to the large keg cooler room.
Great, Kate thought. She'd panicked in the walk-in a few weeks ago, and that room had nothing on this bomb-like capsule. I'm not a huge fan of dark enclosed spaces, she told Bart.
Who is, other than bats and mushrooms? You'll have a flashlight, and you won't be in there long. It's just a matter of doing a wipe down to get rid of any leftover debris from the last batch before we quick flush the system.
Right then, she said over the scared slamming of her heart.
You'll be fine, I promise. I've got to get a couple of things lined up for a meeting with Matt, but Floyd and Nan will get you set up and keep a good eye on you.
He called them over, and Kate began to reconcile herself to this process. All the same, she was no longer impressed by the brew house's shiny rivets and copper accents, and its pressure gauges, valves, and pipes freaked her out.
It's not as bad as it looks, Nan said. We'll help you get in through that hatch at the top and then hand the supplies to you.
How about I just watch you this time and I do it the next? She asked Nan.
The other woman grinned.
Let me think about it. No.
It had been worth a shot.
I'll be right back with water, towels, and a flashlight, Nan said. Floyd, why don't you grab the ladder?
Floyd returned with the ladder, set it up, and climbed a couple of steps until he could reach the hatch at the top of the brew house. Once it was open, he scrambled back down.
I've got it secured. Your turn now, he said.
Okay.
Nan returned and handed her the flashlight. Kate jammed it into the back of her jeans for lack of another secure location that would also keep her hands free.
You're a big, strong dog who can jump high, she said to herself.
What? Nan asked.
It works on my dog when she's scared, so I thought I'd give it a try on me, Kate said as she climbed the ladder.
But the affirmation hadn't helped. She peered into the darkness and then back at the assistant brewers.
So I just...
Climb in, Nan said. Kate took a deep breath and tried to maneuver her body down the hole. Coordination and grace were not going to be part of the equation. She slid through the hatch in the top of the brew house, dropping herself into the darkness. Once there, she sat and assessed the situation. Except for the lingering, evil smell of hops, it could have been worse. Light shone in through the open hatch like a big, fat ray of hope, and the confines weren't as tight as she'd thought they would be. She pulled the flashlight from the back of her jeans and switched it on. Nothing happened.
"Hey, the flashlight batteries are dead," she called to Nan.
Nan's face appeared in the hatchway.
"I could look for more, but by the time I find them, you'll be done."
She threw a roll of paper towels down to Kate, quickly followed by a spray bottle.
"Nan, Floyd, come on into my office. It's time to meet with Matt," Kate heard Bart saying.
Nan stuck her head in the hatch again.
"Sounds like I have to take off."
"Couldn't you hang on a minute?" Kate asked.
She liked knowing there was a lifeline outside her copper kettle.
"Don't worry about it. You're going to do great," Nan said. "Be sure to pay attention to all the seams and outlets. That's where the grunge sticks. Just throw the used paper towels out the top."
"Okay," Kate said.
There was no answer. Nan had disappeared. And the sooner Kate finished, the sooner she could stop being brave. She ripped a couple of paper towels off the roll and reached for the spray bottle. Taking a top-down approach, she began to wipe the tank's interior and hum a little vintage Eric Carmen, which she knew courtesy of her parents' ancient stereo. When she reached the chorus, she burst into full song, "All by Myself." The tank's hatch fell shut with a clang.
"Hey, I wasn't even off key," she said.
And then reality hit her. She was trapped. Sweat popped out on her palms, and she was pretty sure the soles of her feet.
"You're a big, strong dog who can jump high," she said.
Kate braced herself on the sides of the tank and pushed at the hatch. It didn't give. She might be a big, strong dog, but she couldn't sit alone in a metal coffin.
"Come on, open the hatch," she shouted.
The only answer was the rattle of the ladder being removed. And then water began flowing into the tank. It crept its way up her ankles and to her calves, and panic set in big time.
"Someone! Anyone! Come get me!"
Kate kicked at the side of the tank. She knew what was going to happen next. Wurt was boiled. She was about to be boiled alive. Matt paused in his discussions with his brewing staff.
"Did you hear something?"
he asked Bart.
"Just you being too damn stubborn about the winter ale recipe," Bart said.
"No, from out there."
Nan shook her head.
"I don't hear any."
Matt raised his hand to silence her. A dull thud sounded again.
"That."
Matt shot from Bart's office and back into the brewery. The ladder to the brew house lay on its side. The hatch was closed, and Kate was nowhere to be seen. He caught the sound of running water and a muffled shout. Matt grabbed the ladder and was at the top hatch in an instant. Someone had locked the unit, and the only ones who could do that had been with him. He flung open the metal door. Kate stood down in the darkness.
"Are you okay?"
Matt called to her.
"I think I need a raise."
Matt reached in an arm.
"Can you make it up here?"
She grabbed his hand, scrambled out, and pinned herself against his body. She was soaked from the waist down. Kate was gasping so much she could barely get her words out.
"That sucked. That really, really sucked. I know you're supposed to face your fears, but seriously, never again."
Whoever did this to her would pay, Matt thought. He'd find them, and then it would get ugly.
"Come on, let's get you dried off," he said.
By the time they'd reached the ground, Bart had dragged over a chair and Floyd had shut down the brew house. Matt led Kate to the chair.
"Bart, could you call the police?"
Bart looked shaken.
"Sure thing."
Kate settled into Bart's chair, bent over, and untied her soggy sneakers.
"Why would someone do that to me?"
Matt had his guesses, and they had to do with what and who he held of value.
"I don't know," he said.
Now wasn't the time to point out the obvious. She pulled off her shoes and socks. Matt noted that one sock was light blue and the other gray with little yellow ducks on it. Despite his tension, he smiled at the mismatch.
"Do you have any other clothes here?" he asked.
"No."
He did a mental inventory of his office, then said,
"Hang on."
"Believe me, I'm not going anywhere."
And he didn't want her to either. But for her own safety, she would be. After today, Matt was going to make sure Kate was far from Depot Brewing Company. Maybe boyfriend jeans were in style, but boss or whatever more he was to her sweatpants weren't. Kate rolled the waist over as many times as possible, and still she swam in the fabric. She paired the sweatpants with a t-shirt from the brewery store and did a small grimace. Okay, she thought, so she looked like a goofus, but at least she was a dry goofus. Matt was waiting for her by the brewhouse with Chief Erickson.
Do you feel up to answering some questions, Kate? The police chief asked.
Sure.
Matt glanced toward the latest in a stream of sympathetic depot employees who'd been checking on Kate since her big swim.
How about in my office? Matt suggested.
Cleet closed the office door behind them.
Kate, did you see your attacker?
I was at the bottom of a tank, Chief Erickson. It was just me and a whole lot of dark.
The chief scribbled some notes, then turned to Matt, who'd taken a seat behind his desk.
You were close enough to be the first to Kate, Matt. Did you see anything unusual? No. Bart, Floyd, Nan, and I were in Bart's office. We'd been having a pretty intense discussion, so I didn't hear or see anything at first.
He picked up a pen and started jotting on a legal pad. When he was done, he tore off a piece and slid it across his desk to Cleet.
These are the names of the people who were here this morning at 10. The tap room was still closed, so there were no customers in the house.
Not paying, at least, Cleet said. But could an outsider have gotten into the brewery?
It's possible, I suppose, Matt said. Except it's unlikely an outsider would have known that someone was in the tank.
Not so true, Kate said. I was singing all by myself. Kind of loudly, too.
Cleet smiled.
Good song. Other than the brewers, does anyone else touch the brewing tank?
No,
Matt replied.
The only exception would be if Bart has given any private tours. You'll have to ask him about that.
Cleet nodded.
Matt, I don't know what you had planned for that unit today, but I need to call in my fingerprint team. We'll need to fingerprint your staff and you, Matt, though I suppose we already have your prints on file.
Matt showed a flash of a smile at that.
Yeah, I suppose you do from way back when. The file might be a little dusty.
The police chief rose from his chair.
Remember, no one near the brew house.
Cleet left, and Matt's face grew somber.
Kate, we have to talk, he said.
She knew what that meant. She'd last heard those words from Harley Bagger. Would she never hold a job in this town for longer than a month?
You're kidding, right? She asked. You can't possibly be about to fire me.
Matt looked shocked.
I'm sorry.
I don't want sorry. I just want my job.
Kate, I have to do this, he said. Yes, you survived this just wet and scared, but you said it earlier. This attack was aimed straight at you. I can't keep placing you in harm's way.
I know all that, but you're forgetting one crucial thing. I can't eat, repair the nutshell, or begin to plan for the future without money. And I need the bonus to stop the villain who plans to take my house if I can't get current on my mortgage by Thanksgiving.
How about if I keep paying you? You can have the bonus money, the whole thing.
She shook her head. I'm not going to let you pay me for doing nothing.
Why not?
Matt asked.
Apparently I do it for Jerry all the time.
With or without you, I need to find out who did this, or I'm never going to be able to put what happened in the brew house behind me. And what about you? You need this thing solved as much as I do. We must be getting closer if the creeps pushed it this far.
Matt started to speak a couple of times, but cut himself off. She waited.
Okay, work here, he finally said. But understand, that means you're going to be with me 24/7.
She smiled.
I think they have employment laws against those sorts of hours.
He gave her another frustrated look.
You know what I'm saying, and you know why. Someone is after you, and that person isn't messing around. So when we're here, you're with me, and when we're not, you're in my house.
She wanted to say he was exaggerating the situation, except that she'd just been treated like a beer additive.
And at the risk of sounding even more like I'm trying to run your life, did you get the locks changed out at your place this week, Kate?
Actually, no.
She'd been in a haze of poodle contentment and had forgotten Matt's suggestion.
So anyone can walk in and hide until they're ready to come out. Does that sound about right?
Yes, Kate admitted.
And do you have any walls or floors or a bathroom?
Sheesh, I have some walls and floors, and the bees are practically all gone.
You like living with some bees in a gutted house with no locks on an isolated stretch of the lake with a psycho after you?
Kate kicked at the floor and looked at her shoe.
It's not gutted, it's decorator ready. And besides, every house has some bees.
Matt rolled his eyes.
Then it's settled. I'll come with you while you pack. You and your poodle will stay with me until an arrest is made and your house is renovated and 100% bee-free.
That could be a very long time,
Matt shrugged.
True.
He'd sounded almost happy, and secretly, Kate was too.
And you know that we'll probably end up wanting to kill each other, she said.
He smiled.
Old news.
And that people are going to talk.
They always do.
But what was gossip mere seconds ago now would be true. She, Matt Culhane, a fussy poodle, and a three-legged dog were going to be shacking up. The circus had just come to town.
Chapter 16
Matt thought his house was pretty cool. He put a good couple of years into harvesting the timber from his property and then building the place. Because it had been designed to suit his needs, he'd never thought too much about how others might view it. Until now. Kate climbed out of her Jeep, then scooped up Stella, who'd hopped into the driver's seat as soon as it had been vacated. That was close to their actual dog-woman relationship. To be totally accurate, Stella should have been driving the car. Kate checked out his house.
I take it you had a thing for Linkum logs when you were a kid. This is one very impressive adult version thereof.
You know what they say, the bigger the boys, the bigger...
We'll probably do better if we don't talk about the size of anything, especially your toys, she said, lingering by her vehicle. This seemed a lot more sensible in the abstract than in reality. You, me, under one roof? He smiled.
I like it. A lot.
That's what I'm worried about.
Okay, and she was worried that she'd like it a lot. She was worried she'd like it way too much.
Come on in and have a look around, he said.
They climbed the cut flagstone steps to his front porch. He opened the door for Kate and the pooch. She hesitated again.
Is Chuck in there?
Yes, but don't worry about him. I'll lock him in my bedroom until you and Stella get settled.
Kate stepped across the threshold.
Wow, this is gorgeous. There's a lot more light than I expected.
Matt had designed the house so that the back of the main living space had an expanse of windows overlooking the pond and woods beyond.
It's a good-sized place, but there aren't that many actual rooms, he said. I put you in the only other fully enclosed bedroom right next to mine, since I didn't think you'd want to deal with the loft.
He pointed to the ladder that led to the house's half-floor.
The space up there is good, but the climbs up and down might be tough on the poodle.
She set her dog down. A Stella-accessible room would be nice. If this were Chuck, he'd be cruising and sniffing around. Not Stella. She checked out one floor tile and put her nose in the air. Matt guessed she wasn't much for the scent of hound, and she clearly wasn't into him. After stowing Chuck away, Matt led Kate to the guest room. Stella stuck to her side.
It's pretty basic.
He gestured at the queen-sized log bed he'd built from wood they hadn't been able to use in the house.
You have your own bathroom through there.
Works for me.
She sat on the edge of the bed, and Matt watched as she leaned back on her palms like she was testing the mattress for play, his favorite kind of play. Matt couldn't look away. In his mind, he'd already joined her. They were both wearing a hell of a lot less, and Stella was napping elsewhere.
Nice, he said.
Kate flopped back, arms spread, luxuriating on the patchwork quilt he'd swiped from his mother.
It is. It's wonderful.
Matt hadn't been talking about the bed. He'd been thinking out loud, congratulating himself for maneuvering Kate into his house and his life. He moved closer to Kate and the wonderful bed, and a low growl sounded from somewhere very close to his left ankle. He looked down to see Kate's dog bearing piranha-sharp teeth.
Stella, stop that, Kate said. You're going to have to get over it. We're guests here.
The dog's lip curled upward even more, and Matt knew he had to make a tactical retreat until he stocked up on treats. He was going to lose this battle, but the war wasn't over. Matt backed off.
What do you say we move on to the kitchen?
The galley-style kitchen wasn't large, but Matt had built it to last with granite countertops and quality appliances. Not that he used much of anything but the microwave.
"We haven't talked about cooking," he said.
"And we should probably keep it that way, too," she said. "My cooking would scare you. How about I'll fend for me and you fend for you?"
"Sure, but if I decide to actually cook a meal, I'm going to cook for you, too."
"Thank you," she said, smiling. She moved closer to the fridge where he kept various niece and now nephew photos and scraps of kid art on the door. Kate pointed to the hospital baby shot of Maura and Todd's latest. "There's TJ." Matt nodded.
"Yep, that's the bruiser. How did you know they were calling him TJ?
"From the birth announcement."
"You got a birth announcement?"
"Of course," she said. "And I'm going to the Pamper Mom party that Lizzie is throwing next week."
"Party? I didn't know about a party."
"It's for women only. Lizzie probably wouldn't think of mentioning it to you." Apparently, Kate was more looped into the Culhane clan than Matt had known. This was yet another sign that his sisters had a full underground social machine in place. A slightly ominous thought, but since it also meant Kate was both watched over and building friendships that might make her feel more at home in the town, he'd learned to deal.
"Anything else you'd like to share?" he asked.
"Not a thing." After 6 days with Kate under his roof, Matt was having a hard time imagining her not being there. Unfortunately, the man and poodle relationship remained nothing to brag about.
"Are you sure you're okay with me being here on card night?" Kate called from the kitchen. "I could always meet up with Ella for a girl's night out."
"You're cool here,"
Matt said as he stowed beer by the poker table set up in his living room.
"Chuck likes having you around."
Plus, Matt didn't want Kate too far out of sight. He remained spooked by last Thursday's near miss, and he flat out enjoyed her company. Kate came into the room with her dog trotting after her. She handed Matt a bowl of potato chips, and he stuck them on the table.
"I'm glad Chuck's fond of me," she said. "Probably best that I stay in tonight anyway. After all the fries I chowed at work today, if I ate any more bar food, I'd never fit in these jeans again."
"Couldn't have that,"
Matt said, eyeing both the jeans and the hot curves that filled them. For 2 days, Matt had fought hard not to give in to temptation and touch her. He was done fighting. Matt took a step toward her. Stella growled. He glared at the poodle. Kate couldn't help a little smile.
"I'll go grab that sandwich tray."
She cruised into the kitchen, but Stella kept eyeballing Matt. Figuring it couldn't hurt, he tossed the dog a potato chip. The poodle crunched through it in 3 chomps. She wagged her tail at Matt, clearly seeking more. Just to see if the chip eating had been a fluke, he gave her another. It disappeared immediately. Matt smiled.
"I think this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship."
A knock sounded at the front door, and Bart and Travis came in. After they dumped their jackets on the sofa, Bart handed out cigars. Kate popped out of the kitchen with the sandwich tray. While she said hello to Travis and Bart, Matt put the tray up high enough that Chuck, who was faking a nap by the fireplace, couldn't grab it. Kate spotted the cigars and wrinkled her nose.
"Do you guys really smoke those things?"
"Sure,"
Matt said, though his usually just smoldered in the ashtray.
"Gross."
Travis cut his eyes to her.
"Ever tried one? You should before dissing them."
Kate laughed.
"Thanks, but I'm still recovering from the beer tasting. I'll just mosey on into the kitchen and think healthy thoughts while I eat my salad. Come on, Stella, let's go."
Stella stared at her owner, but didn't move from Matt's side. Kate motioned to her.
"Come on, girl."
When Stella stayed put, she said to Matt, "It looks like you two are getting along better."
"We're working on it,"
Matt said. "One chip at a time.
Don't worry about her. She can hang with us for a while."
Kate gave the poodle one last speculative look and headed back into the kitchen alone. 5 minutes later, Matt's brother-in-law, Jack, arrived with a bottle of Irish whiskey in hand.
"Let's get rolling," Matt said. "Todd called this afternoon. He can't make it. TJ has him too sleep-deprived to function." "Which is why he should be here," Jack said. "We could use a donkey."
Bart poured everyone a shot.
"We still have you."
For a second, Jack looked as sharp-edged as his red brush cut.
but then he joined in on the laughter. After that, the ceremonial opening whiskey was downed, some bull was shot, and stacks of quarters were lined up. Matt slid the dealer button in front of himself on the table and shuffled the deck.
"Texas Hold'em," he announced to the players.
Kate wandered back into the room. "Is Stella still here?"
Matt grinned. "Right next to me. Jealous?"
"Possibly." Matt chose to take that as a sign that she wanted his company and not the poodle's.
"Have you ever played poker?"
She paused.
"Once."
Maybe no one else in the room could read her, but Matt knew she was messing with the truth. Kate's tell was a subtle widening of her eyes.
"So, Kate, wanna join in?"
Jack asked in a casual voice.
"I guess I could. I mean, if it wouldn't slow you guys down too much."
"Never," Jack said.
He clearly thought he'd landed his donkey, but Matt bet Jack was going to keep the tail in big ears.
"Sure then," Kate said. "I'd love to."
Matt gave Kate his chair and half his quarters. After he'd brought another chair from the kitchen and settled in next to her, a low growl sounded from beneath the table. Matt grabbed a couple of chips. He popped one into his mouth and subtly let the other one drop to an overly possessive poodle.
"Since we have a new player, how about we go with a little straight poker, aces high, sevens wild, and I'll sit out on the first couple of hands and help Kate get started," Matt said.
The table agreed, and Matt dealt. Once Kate had her hand, he moved his chair closer to coach her. Stella wasn't square with the new arrangement and let everyone know by barking. Matt edged the potato chip bowl closer. He was going to need it. A couple more chips and many hands later, everyone was played out. Jack, Travis, and Bart had rounded up their remaining change, razzed Kate about her big win, and headed home. Kate now sat at the kitchen table as Matt worked his way through the last of the night's mess. Stella was flopped at her owner's feet, zoned out on carbs.
"So how many times have you really played poker?"
Matt asked, hoping to keep Kate's attention from the chip-enriched poodle.
"Lots," Kate said.
Matt smiled.
"As I thought."
He finished packing away the guy's unsmoked cigars. While they'd played, he'd silently nixed any attempt to light one. Matt had wanted Kate next to him too much to risk her leaving the game over a stogie. She rose and reached for the nearly empty potato chip bag.
"I started playing a while back. Casino night fundraisers were a fad downstate a couple of years ago. Anytime one of Richard's clients' pet charities had one, we'd go."
Kate moved on to put glasses into the dishwasher, and Stella followed. "Anyway, after a couple of events, Richard stopped playing at my table," Kate said. "It irked him to see me kick butt. It was luck, mostly."
"Luck and being able to read others," Matt said.
He was done hiding what he wanted from Kate. It was time to be read, loud and clear. He tucked a couple of chips into his right hand while she was closing the dishwasher.
"I liked having you next to me tonight," he said. "And Stella didn't seem to mind us being close."
She held so still that Matt wondered for an instant whether she was going to bolt from the kitchen. But he knew she wanted him, too.
"In fact, I'll bet my winnings we could get even closer," Matt said.
As he moved in to kiss her, he dropped a chip for Stella. Then he wished like hell that dogs chewed with their mouths closed. Kate glanced down.
"Did you just give her a treat?"
Matt kept it short and sweet.
"Yes."
"Now I know why you two are making friends. Smart move. But I didn't see you get anything from the treat jar. The last thing I saw you near was that bag of potato chips. Did you give her a chip?"
"No."
She stepped back, looked him up and down, and smiled.
"You are the worst bluffer ever."
Which was bull, except when it came to Kate.
"Open your hand," she said.
Matt shifted his feet, stalling.
"Which one?"
She wrapped her fingers around his right hand and squeezed. Matt's lone chip died an ugly death.
"Now open it," she said.
Matt did as directed. A few crumbs slipped from his hand, and Stella dove for them.
"Stella, no," Kate said.
Too late. Stella snapped up the bits before they hit the floor. Kate gave Matt a stern look.
"You know I don't feed her from the table."
Matt dumped the remaining crumbs into the wastebasket.
We aren't at the table. We're in the kitchen.
Stella trotted up to Matt and braced her front feet on his shin as she begged for more. Kate sighed.
You've created a monster. Down, Stella!
The dog grudgingly obeyed, but stayed close to Matt. Chapter 17. For about the 10th time since Wednesday poker night, Kate tripped over a pair of Matt's shoes, and it was only Friday. Why would a guy think it was smart to drop his shoes exactly where he'd taken them off? He had big feet, too, and many, many pairs of shoes. Kate picked up the latest pair and chucked them just to the left of his closed bedroom door, where they joined a bunch of their kin. If you want to develop a shoe-eating habit, I promise I won't say a word, she told Stella. It would be good payback for Matt getting you hooked on potato chips. The dog was now a serious chip junkie. Even though she'd gotten sick on them, she still sat longingly in front of the pantry cabinet where Matt always kept his stash. Kate's poodle had food issues on another front, too. Stella had been raised with an open supply of food. Kate would put kibble in her bowl in the morning, and the poodle would graze at will. But now, the second Kate filled Stella's bowl, Glutton Chuck appeared, excited, as if Thanksgiving had come around yet again. The instant Kate looked away, the chow was gone in one gulp. Chuck did not believe in chewing. As though he knew Kate was thinking about him, a bark rolled into the hallway from the living room, and then another. These weren't excited sounds, more expository statements.
Woof!
Kate joined Chuck in front of the fireplace.
Woof!
He had barely lifted his head from his napping position. What? She asked him.
Woof!
Kate looked at Stella, who had followed in her tracks. You speak, dog. Tell him to stop. But Stella couldn't be persuaded to negotiate, and Chuck had no intention of stopping. Okay, lassie, did Timmy fall down the well again?
Woof.
Am I the prettiest princess in the land?
Woof.
Kate could have played her game a while longer, but Chuck's hound bark was beginning to make her teeth rattle. She walked through the kitchen and onto the basement door, which was by the house's back entry. Stella stood at the back door and stared expectantly at her. Okay, you first, then I'll deal with the big dog. She stuck Stella on the outdoor lead that had been brought over from the nutshell and headed back inside. Matt, she called. He was downstairs working out, a daily event. She heard the whine of a treadmill going at warp speed, but no word from Matt. Hey, Culhane, she yelled, cupping her hands to either side of her mouth.
What?
Your dog needs you.
The treadmill's hum lowered as he brought its speed down, then stopped entirely.
Woof!
See? Like that, she said as he climbed the steps.
When he made the top, Kate was transfixed. He used his right hand to wipe sweat from a six-pack of abs so hard she wanted to trace each ridge with her tongue, twice. His smile was slow and knowing.
You probably should let me by.
Or not, she thought.
Woof!
He's just lying there barking, she said. Matt moved past her, close enough that she could catch the heat rolling off his body, though it just might have been hers. Kate followed him to Chuck.
What's up, buddy? He asked the dog.
Woof.
What's he barking at? Kate asked.
He's barking at nothing. That's his water bark. He has specific barks for specific things.
You've got to be kidding.
You think? Come with me to the kitchen.
Kate trailed after him. Amazing, she said as she watched him claim the empty water bowl and refill it. And really, she wasn't just talking about the dog. When it came to Matt, the view from the rear was almost as impressive as that from the front. She catalogued each of these moments to tide her over in her lonely, dog-guarded bed.
So Stella the Wonder Poodle doesn't have different barks? He asked.
No, but she can now identify an unopened potato chip bag by sight.
Matt laughed.
A lot of dogs have different barks for different needs. Stella's pretty smart. Maybe you just don't know her signs anymore.
Maybe, but for now, let's talk about shoes.
Isn't that the kind of thing that would go over better with Ella and my sisters?
Doubtful, Imelda, she said. I'm betting if I stacked all of my shoes against yours, you'd win.
He looked almost wounded.
I don't have that many.
This way, please. She beckoned him away from the kitchen and to the bedroom hallway in tour guide fashion. And here we have Mount Culhane, an active volcano, altitude 6 pairs and growing daily. He regarded the pile suspiciously.
How did they all end up here?
I've been moving them every day.
From where?
Exactly where you take them off, it appears. It was becoming a minefield out there. He was still staring at the shoes.
I'd wondered where they all went.
What? They're right by your door. Don't you look at the ground?
No need, he said. I could walk this house blindfolded.
Then next time I'll trip you up and take them all the way into your bedroom. A slow smile spread across his face.
Would you?
Kate realized she had just committed a tactical error and morphed into his maid. He leaned down and kissed her.
Thanks, sweetheart.
Okay, make that 2 tactical errors, because she didn't stop him. And now 3, because she was kissing him back. It had been tough work forgetting just what it felt like to be kissed by Matt Culhane. And it had been tougher yet to block the thought that she was one wall away from him every night. She knew that he sometimes talked in his sleep. She knew that he woke and showered at 6. And she knew that right now she'd be beyond blissed out should they make love. Telling herself she was 10 kinds of crazy, Kate deepened the kiss and touched the wall of muscle on his chest. And while they kissed some more, she ran her fingers down to the waistband of his shorts. She didn't know for sure what he'd look like totally naked, but she could give it a good guess based on the size of his shoes. He brought her tighter against his body. She drew in a surprised breath. She had underestimated. Aren't you going to do that magical thing where I'm suddenly on a bed? She asked, because she really, really wanted him to. He made some space between the two of them.
I don't know. I haven't made my mind up yet.
What could possibly involve our minds? She'd been joking, but he looked serious.
One question, he said. If we do this, if I make love to you, what happens next?
We go unconscious?
No, after that. Does it mean that you're going to move from your room and into mine?
Well, no, but it does mean we'll both be less tense. He shook his head.
That's not good enough for me, Kate.
But back at the hotel, you would have...
You're right. But I've been thinking about this since we were out of town, and it turns out that I'm not a fling sort of guy. Actually, once I considered it, I realized I never have been.
Something wasn't computing. What about your Keene's Harbor's reputation as a resident Don Juan? He shrugged.
I've dated my share of women, but none of those women have anything to do with you, Matt said. You and I are in a different place. We're friends, the kind of friends I don't want to give up unless we become something more. So if you and I go there, it has to be with a full commitment to be my lover, because no way am I going to risk our friendship for less.
You're scaring me a little.
I probably should be scaring you a lot, because I mean it, Kate. Once I'm in, I'm all in.
So unless she was ready for commitment, she had struck out? And what about the nutshell? She asked.
It has nothing to do with us. It's all business.
Kate crossed her arms. You wouldn't say that if it was your house or your brewery.
Kate, I paid the bank $200,000 for that mortgage. I gave you until Thanksgiving to make a go of it, but I can't afford to wait any longer than that. I need the money either from you or from the restaurant I plan to open next summer.
I'm sorry, she said. I'm just not ready for this. And while it was tougher than any trek she'd ever taken, Kate retreated to reclaim her poodle. She might be 10 kinds of stupid, but for now, she'd managed to avoid adding an 11th. The next morning, Matt walked into his office, or what had been his office before he'd made Kate his personal assistant. Now, ownership was questionable. Ginger just called, Kate said.
What did she want?
Until he had a signal from Kate otherwise, he planned to keep it all business. She'd like to know your Traverse City schedule. We're working on coordinating your calendar so that someone other than you has a clue where you'll be at any given time.
Nobody but me really needs to know.
Nice try, but untrue. We also talked about getting bids from subcontractors on the Tropicana since you've decided to be the general contractor. I know you wanted to keep the bids local, but it's a motel, Matt. You need to take advantage of that.
We think you should widen your net some, since you can offer up rooms in exchange for lower price quotes. Matt smiled.
You look comfortable there.
She looked around. Where?
Behind my desk, with your papers everywhere.
There was a certain order to his pile filing system, and he hoped she hadn't messed with it. Where else would I work? I mean, I suppose I could go use the phone at the server stand, but I figure folks should have to work a little harder for their gossip than just lurking behind me.
How about we switch off, and at least I get the spot behind my desk for a while, he asked. I need to get to the computer.
She rose. Do you want me out of here? And that was the thing of it. Even though they had a long way to go on a personal basis, and it made him a little crazy to have her close, he wanted her nearby.
You can stick around, he said. I'm just placing a yeast order. We're coming to the last generation we can use to brew.
Kate had just moved to the visitor's side of the desk when a knock sounded at the door, and Lizzie poked her head into the office.
So, business or pleasure? Matt asked.
Business, definitely.
Lizzie sat down.
Chief Erickson asked me to stop by and give you an update on the incident with Kate in the brew house.
I'm guessing that it's more of a no-news update, or Cleet would be here himself, he said.
Lizzie nodded.
You've got his act down. The bottom line is that the brew house is as clean of evidence as the arson event. There were no prints that couldn't be accounted for. I can rule someone out, though.
Really? Who?
Matt asked.
Jerry. It seems that he took on a second job when his wife got laid off from the bank. He was there when Kate took her swim.
Good to know. Sort of,
Matt said.
He thought he could pull off a second job without rocking the boat, but it's been a scheduling mess, Lizzie said. He's going to come talk to you.
Matt nodded. He wished his manager had done that earlier, but he knew all about overconfident sending a guy out to the end of a branch about to break. Matt had done it both literally and figuratively. He could forgive Jerry for doing the same.
It's a start, but not much of one, Lizzie said. For now, let's keep things status quo. I know you've got the guard service, but we'll continue with the extra drive-bys, too. And Kate, you keep staying at Matt's.
Matt looked down at his desk to hide his reaction to this mixed blessing. Then he started reading the papers Kate had left there. He picked one up.
Kate, what's this about?
It's a booking contract.
I see that. And I see that Depot Brewing Company is contracting with someone named Dr. Love.
A blues band. I need you to sign the contract first, of course.
Nice of you to recall that detail, he said.
I know where I am on the org chart.
I don't have an org chart.
Kate pointed at a file folder at the top edge of the desk.
You do now. I was going to post it by the time clock.
This is a microbrewery, not a multinational corporation, Matt said. With the possible exception of you, everyone knows who's in charge here.
Lizzie stood.
I'm all done here. I'll just leave you to do whatever it is you're doing.
Witnessing a pretty impressive attempted coup, I think, Matt said.
Okay, then.
Lizzie gave Kate a wave.
Coup away.
Matt turned to Kate as soon as Lizzie left the room.
What is a brewery going to do with a blues band?
Start a summer music series out on the terrace when the weather allows and in the tap room when it doesn't?
At least she'd made her statement sound more like a question.
Look, I'm not saying that the idea is bad, because actually, it's great, he said. I just don't have the time to deal with it.
I've got too much going on up north.
That's the best part. I can do all the grunt work, Kate said. You don't give me enough to do, so if I have this on my plate, there's a good chance I won't be nosing into everything else.
How good of a chance?
About all she had left to do was alphabetize the pantry and tick off the cooks.
Very good. And I really think this could work, Matt. You have a lot of summer people who will drive all the way to Traverse City for live music. Keep them in town, and your business will jump. Matt just shook his head. She was right.
Write me up a proposal.
Kate came around the desk and stood close to him. She riffled through some papers, then held up a neatly bound document.
Already done.
He opened the report and paged through a market study, cost analysis, and financial projections, complete with pie charts.
You're good, Kate. Very good.
Kate smiled wickedly.
You don't know the half of it.
But he wanted to. Chapter 18. Kate didn't want to jinx things, but she was on a roll.
Over a week had passed since Matt had given her permission to schedule music events, and she'd gotten next summer booked. And because she was in overachiever mode, she'd also finished all the promo materials. Okay, maybe she wasn't so much in overachiever mode as fill every waking hour so she couldn't think of Matt mode, but no matter. The results were the same. Kate rose and double-checked the events calendar she'd hung on the office wall. Even better, her house was nearly repaired. The contractor had been very cooperative. He said he needed the work so she could pay after the holidays. All it needed was some fresh paint, some new furniture, and a head-to-toe cleaning. She stood, hands on hips, pleased. "You're golden," she told herself. Matt had scheduled a mandatory 10:30 staff meeting this morning. For no reason other than pride, she'd wanted to be done with these projects before then. Kate's cell phone rang. She went back to the desk, picked it up, and did a double take at the name on the caller ID, Barb Appleton. She and her mom didn't talk frequently. It wasn't that her mom didn't love her or that she didn't love her mom. They were just in different places in life. But today, Kate felt happy that her mom was calling. "Hey, Mom."
"Hello, Kate. You're a tough one to reach."
"I answered on the third ring," she said.
"I didn't mean now, dear. I've been leaving messages on the phone at the Nutshell for days. Where have you been?"
Kate searched for an explanation. Her mom liked her kids in one piece.
I've been having some work done out there and staying with friends until it's complete," Kate said. "What sort of work?"
"I've been getting the exterior doors rekeyed," she replied, which wasn't a total lie because she still planned to, eventually.
"Why would you do that? We've owned that cottage for decades and kept it unlocked for just as long. There's no place safer than Keene's Harbor."